This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio.
It's a vending machine, but with less salt and vinegar chips and Mars bars and a little more, well, prescription medicine.
Now, I don't know how I feel about this, Rich. Medical vending machines that some doctors are calling for in GP clinics. On top of that, there are also calls for new laws meaning supermarkets and online retailers could sell prescription medicine. And that's obviously a pretty big shake-up for pharmacists, and it raises the question, what a pharmacy is going to look like in the future?
Already across the US, the UK and parts of Europe, there are supermarket pharmacies, and it's pretty much become the norm. But in Australia, it still hasn't happened. But from what we're hearing, that's all about to change.
Would vending machines in doctors' clinics or supermarket pharmacies make access to medicine easier, especially in regional and rural areas where it's hard to attract GPs and pharmacists?
And would it actually make medicine cheaper, or does it lead to prescription errors, and does it make things like doctor shopping easier?
Should you be able to access medicine through a vending machine or at your local supermarkets?
And what does this mean for the future of your local chemist? If you're a pharmacist, if you're a GP, or if you're someone that maybe has trouble accessing the medicine and the prescriptions you need.
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
Sue is in Bendigo. Sue, what do you reckon about this idea?
Hi, I'm a bit nervous. I'm not a pharmacist, but I do work in pharmacy. Look, it's the way the world is going now, but when you're dealing with elderly people and middle-aged people, especially they're on a lot of medications, and sometimes they don't even know what the medications they're taking are for, and they want to talk to their pharmacy, like, there's this care that still has to come into it, and I can't, unless in the supermarket there is a whole new area separate from people doing their shopping and the noise and everything like that, I just think, you know, care's still got to be taken. It's all right if you're on like an Asmol or Nexium or something like that that is easy to acquire over the counter without a prescription and everything, but people do still want to talk to their pharmacist.
If it's something that you take all the time and you're used to it and you know the potential side effects, or you know that it's something that your body is used to. However, Sue, you're right. If it's something that you're maybe taking for the first time, I had that experience just the other day and I was given a prescription, but it was my pharmacist that came over and said to me, have you ever taken this before? And he spent some time and went through and I was able to ask those questions. Do you fear that that might be lost in supermarkets?
I do, and I do know of some pharmacies that are not doing that now. I mean, we get a lot of customers that have been to a few pharmacies and have come to our pharmacy and just say, oh, the pharmacist that I went to before didn't explain anything like that to me. And a lot of the time the pharmacists know a bit more than the doctors, really. But I just think care to attention, and especially with the elderly and people that are on a lot of medication.
Yeah, although you're starting that debate, Sue, I think if pharmacists know more than doctors, because it is really heated, Jono, and putting today's show together, we sort of always know there's been a little bit of argy-bargy between GPs, between doctors and pharmacists and the roles that they play. And if anything, I feel like just anecdotally, this is just going to ramp that up. And that's the last thing that as patients and consumers that we want or need.
That's right. We need our health system to work together as one, which has been particularly important over the last 18 months. Let's have a chat with Dr. Omar Khorshid, who is the National President of the AMA, the Australian Medical Association. Good morning. You've described pharmacies as an extremely protected industry. What do you mean by that?
Good day, Donna. Yeah, look, many people would be surprised to know that our community pharmacy industry is extremely protected by state and federal laws, to the point where a pharmacist can't go set up a new pharmacy down the road from an existing one, because they're not allowed to. They're not allowed to compete with existing pharmacies. You can't put a pharmacist can't put a pharmacy in a GP practice unless it meets certain criteria. And even private hospitals can't run their own internal hospital pharmacies in many states. They've actually got to contract with a private, you know, community-type pharmacy in order to do that. So it is quite bizarre in a kind of modern, open world that you have this industry that is so protected. And, of course, it's nothing like that for doctors. Anyone can own a GP practice or a specialist practice. They can be corporate. They can be, you know, a pharmacist can own a GP. That's all fine. Only pharmacists can own pharmacies, with the exception of Chemist Warehouse, which seems to have its own set of rules. So what we're talking about here is just a bit of deregulation. We're not at all suggesting we should be getting rid of community pharmacies. They are absolutely critical, and they're working together with local GPs is a really important part of our health system. But for many Australians, they would be very interested in other ways to access their medicines, you know, cheaper ways, ways that are more convenient, you know, potentially ways in a GP practice, or when they're already out and about doing their shopping at the supermarket. Mm.
How does this go? If you're talking about deregulation, though, Omar, how do you then know and ask those questions and ensure that the safety and the health of that person, that patient, is coming first? I received a text back from a pharmacist on this topic today, and they said to me, well, GPs have got rocks in their heads if they think that this is going to work and that vending machines are going to work. You know, you're not going to look at any prescription errors that are potentially going to come up. So if you water down where people can get their medicines from, are you also watering down the advice and the expertise that you're getting?
You could if you set it up poorly, and we're, of course, not suggesting anything like that. We're already seeing some pharmacists actually working in GP practices, doing medication management reviews and assisting patients, particularly those, as we described earlier, with multiple medications and who may be elderly and not necessarily understand everything. So there are new ways of doing things. You could actually have the pharmacist in the GP practice, and the vending machine is just a way to deliver the drugs. But actually the advice is still coming from a pharmacist. And absolutely, we agree with the separation of prescription and dispensing. We don't support one person doing both of those things because it does add to the safety of our community if there's a second set of eyes keeping an eye on particularly new drugs. But for many Australians, if they've been taking the same medication for years, they might prefer a more convenient way of accessing that. And at the moment, you can't even get more than 1 month of a blood pressure pill on one prescription. Now, why is that? Why couldn't a GP say, hey, I think, you know, this is all very stable. You've been taking the same dose for 5 years. Let's give you 3 months' worth in one script. That's currently not possible.
We've got a flood of texts on this and lots of people calling through as well. But one of these texts here says, this medicine vending machine idea proposed by the AMA is a means to devalue the role that pharmacists play in therapy. Doctors diagnose and prescribe. Pharmacists are the drug therapy experts. A vending machine cannot take the place of an experienced pharmacist. How would you respond to that?
I agree with it, Donna. That's absolutely true. And we're not at all suggesting that pharmacists should be replaced in our health system. They are a critical part of our system. We have them in our hospitals. We have them in our communities. We need them because the doctors don't do the dispensing, and nor should they. And as I mentioned before, the pharmacists add another layer of safety. So we support the separation, but we're saying that it does not mean that you have to have exclusive ownership rules. It does not mean that you can't have a proper pharmacy within a Coles or a Woolworths supermarket if that's what the community decides. And we're calling for a conversation about what might be the best in a changing environment. Now we've got e-prescribing, we've got medication management software within GP's practice management system, so it picks up a lot of the things that pharmacists used to have to pick up. The situation is changing in the world. We've got artificial intelligence. So let's look at how we can deregulate our industry to make sure that it absolutely protects the safety of Australians, but also recognises the fact that Australians are spending $10.8 billion a year on out-of-pocket costs for drugs. It's the biggest area of out-of-pocket costs in our health system, bigger than doctors or any other part of the system, physios, etc. And if we can make that part a little bit more competitive, we can drop those prices a little bit, and that's going to help Australian consumers.
Dr. Omar Khorshed, thanks so much for your time. The AMA National President, this text, pharmacies in Germany are just medicine, no makeup or handbag or smelly candles. And this, there was a pharmacy in Coles in Bourke Street in the 90s, but there was also a post office and shoe repair store. The pharmacy disappeared when the site was changed to a Target store in around 1995-96. A little later in the show, we'll actually look at how this might affect regional and in particular rural people, Jono. We know there is a huge issue for there not being enough GPs and not being enough pharmacists, but the role of a pharmacist in areas where you can't get a GP, then things are vastly different. But what I find fascinating is that the two industries are really butting heads over this. And, you know, they just want to have a conversation. As Omar said, they just want to have a conversation around this. I don't know how civil that conversation is going to be.
Yeah, and Omar was talking about the rules around where you can build a pharmacy. So there are these location rules banning new chemists opening within 1.5 kilometres of an existing pharmacy and restricting ownership to pharmacists and limiting online sales to brick and mortar operators. That's part of what's been described as a closed shop approach to pharmacy. But from your perspective, would it actually help if you could get access to a vending machine, 24 hours a day, or if you could just walk into a supermarket?
And how that vending machine works as well, is it something that I see the dude that stocks our vending machine here to make sure that there's always little cans of, you know, soft drink and tuna and things, especially for the grandstand people that work around the clock. But so is it something that gets restocked like that?
Yeah.
Or is it something that's more like a click and collect? We will get to your calls in just a moment, so please stay tight. But Anthony Tassini is the Victorian branch president of the Pharmacy Guild of Australia and also the owner of a pharmacy in Cranbourne East. Anthony, the two professions are really butting head over this. How do you feel about it?
Thanks for having me on the show. I listened to the AMA president saying they'd like to have a conversation, and we're always willing to have conversations with our health professional colleagues about how we can improve patient care, but it's a bit difficult to have a conversation when you're having to respond to these really poorly thought out ideas in the media rather than actually coming together and having a discussion about how we can improve care. It's a terrible idea. It's not based on any evidence of working anywhere in the world. And what the location rules actually do here in Australia is it helps spread out PBS-approved pharmacies so that there is greater accessibility to the public to PBS medicine. So 87% of the Australian public live within 2.5 kilometres of an approved pharmacy to get PBS medicines. And sadly, that's just not the case in terms of accessibility to a GP. They tend to be clustered in metropolitan areas. We have even seen in Melbourne during the COVID-19 pandemic that there's been gaps in access in some of the western and northern suburbs to getting a vaccination. So when you remove things like location rules, it actually has really bad unintended consequences on patient access. I can tell you that I can't think of a town in Australia that has a general practice clinic but doesn't have a pharmacy, but there's plenty of examples of the opposite.
Right, yeah, because that's what the AMA president was talking about there, these location rules banning new chemists from opening within 1.5 kilometres of an existing pharmacy.
If I could just jump in there, that's actually an incorrect statement about this 1.5 kilometre. It's actually incorrect. There is a range of rules that are there to help spread out PBS-approved pharmacies. You can open a PBS-approved pharmacy in a large medical centre that meets certain criteria as long as it's at least 300 metres from another PBS-approved pharmacy. And that's just one example where, I'm sorry, the AMA's got this wrong and doesn't understand the rules.
What about the idea, though, that it will reduce the cost of medicines? We know that for a lot of people, the cost of medicine is ludicrous. It is through the roof, and people can sometimes go without food in order to get their medicine. The AMA is also saying that if we open this up, if we broaden it out, if we give more people access, whether it be online, supermarkets, vending machines, that it will reduce the cost of medicine and make it more affordable for people.
I don't understand the logic behind that, because the majority of prescriptions dispensed in Australia, over 300 million prescriptions dispensed every year, are subsidised under the Pharmaceutical Benefit Scheme, the PBS. So there's a set price based on a government subsidy. And the Pharmacy Guild, we are also concerned about the out-of-pocket costs for Australians based on the co-payment that general patients, those without a concession card, have to pay for subsidised medicines. So the majority of prescriptions are subsidised under the PBS. We can reduce the out-of-pocket costs for Australians by lowering the co-payment they're paying through an increase in the PBS subsidy. Now, again, I have to pull up the AMA president here. He's got it wrong in terms of what Australians are paying in terms of out-of-pocket costs. The figure quoted in their paper is a PBS subsidy, and that's flatlined. That has flatlined over the last at least 5 years due to reforms to the PBS
price. Yeah, but there's a text here that says, bring on competition. I live in the Dandenongs and the local chemist charges 2.5 times the cost for my script compared to the chemist at Fountain Gate.
There's already a significant amount of competition within the pharmacy sector. We've already got close to 6,000 pharmacies owned by at least 4,000 individual pharmacy owners. When you deregulate industries, we've seen the experience both here in Australia and internationally. What happens when you deregulate industries? You get corporate interests coming in and it becomes an oligopoly. You have two or three major corporate players and everyone else gets flushed out or becomes very minor. It doesn't increase competition in the true sense. And when you speak with patients, and I'm in my pharmacy today doing COVID-19 vaccinations, when you speak to patients about what bothers them, what keeps them up at night tends to be getting into a doctor or a specialist, the out-of-pocket costs with getting to their doctor, specialist or elective surgery. And what the AMA is putting up is so flawed, it doesn't represent the grassroots GP that I have the pleasure of working with every day in my pharmacy. They're not interested in this. This doesn't represent the great work that local pharmacists and doctors are doing together, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic.
What about the overseas experience? Because there's a similar setup where you can go into supermarkets in Canada, the UK, the US. In the US, for example, Walmart employs more than 10,000 pharmacists across 3,000 retail pharmacies throughout the US, and they've launched a 24-hour pharmacy service more than a decade ago. So it seems to be working okay over there. Why can't it work here?
Well, the concerns is when you have health in the same store and aisles of tobacco being sold and liquor and these sorts of things. Now, with pharmacists owning pharmacies, we're accountable to our patients. We are accountable to our registration board that we have to put patients first with the pharmacy board. When you have corporate interests owning pharmacies or any establishment, they put the shareholder first. Profit is the first priority, and this doesn't work for health. Now, the AMA national president spoke earlier around pharmacists can own GP practices but not the other way around. We didn't create those rules. And if you speak to general practitioners working in some of these corporate setups where it's deregulated and corporate ownership of them, they don't think it's a great idea. Two wrongs don't make a right here.
We can see how passionate you are about this, Anthony. Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it. We know you're busy.
Thanks for having me.
That's Anthony Tassini. He's the Victorian Branch President of the Pharmacy Guild of Australia, currently in his pharmacy as we speak in Cranbourne East. And you can just hear how these professions are butting heads and just how complicated this is. And a lot of it, I honestly believe, is due to location and accessibility that you have when it comes, and cost as well. This text here is saying, surely when it's introduced, it will evolve and it'll be a great deal that will work for everyone. But Nick in South Gippsland says, my father was a committed community pharmacist and this proposed by the AMA is outrageous. Community pharmacists are the pillars of the community.
Yeah, and there's a couple of different options here. It's not necessarily that just the big supermarket chains will take over and open their own pharmacies in store. There could be an option where you have a kind of an alliance where the local pharmacist might move into the supermarket or something like that. So there's a few different options there, but also that, you know, there are claims of hypocrisy that, you know, I mean, why does existing Australian legislation mean that a supermarket, well, it prevents a supermarket from owning a pharmacy, but not a pharmacy from owning a supermarket?
That's Kathy, all about to change, and we'll hear later in the show.
Kathy is in Northcote. Good morning, Kathy. What are you thinking?
Good morning, Jono. I'll give you an example of why I don't think vending machines should be used willy-nilly, because my neighbour next door, he's on a lot of medication for various things, and at one point, even though he was vaccinated for the flu, he did manage to get the flu, and he was a really sick budgie, I can tell you. So I went down to the chemist, and the chemist knows their customers very, very well. The relationship that they build up with their customers is fantastic. And I asked George, can I buy this cold and flu for my neighbour? And he said, absolutely not. He said, this is not safe for him to take with all his other medications. You must not give him this.
So do you think you would still get that advice, though, Kathy, if that pharmacist happened to be in a supermarket? You could still speak to a pharmacist there.
But you won't have a relationship with them.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people are worried about, that, you know, that you do develop a relationship and you're
that's
on a first-name basis.
That's changing, though. That's changing. You know, like once upon a time someone would say, go see your family doctor. And I used to have a family doctor. Maybe you did. Maybe your folks did. But even that's different now. Like how many of us even have a relationship with our GP anymore?
Well, I mean, Kathy does. Kathy was on first-name basis with George, her local pharmacist. So I guess it depends where you are and what your kind of relationship is. Maggie in Werribee is worried about the wrong dose. She says, how could a vending machine tell you that the doctor has given you the wrong dose? So for Maggie, it's about checks and balances.
Mary's in Coburg. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I'm actually a pharmacist, and there's one big point that always gets forgotten. The reason why pharmacists are separate to are allowed to own the business and not doctors is because drug reps. Now, drug reps are always keen to get the doctor's ear because they are trying to sell a medication. And unfortunately, doctors do get some kickbacks as a result of that.
Is that changing? Now, that's been an issue for such a long time, Mary. Is that slowly getting less of, you know, being a big problem?
Okay. There's a lot of competition when it comes to which drug companies can sell what medication. Now, in terms of having a doctor separate from a business that obviously deals with medication, can you understand the problem that sometimes a doctor may sway towards a particular brand because they will get a better deal? Because obviously as pharmacists, if we buy a particular medication from a drug company, they may give us kickbacks with other drugs, which means that we may get that particular brand free for a month versus another brand, which... So do you see what I mean? It starts getting very complicated. But it has to be separate.
Mary, that's what I was about to ask you. I mean, doctors are often targeted by drug reps, but pharmacists would be as well, wouldn't they?
Yes, but we don't control the scripts. That's a big difference. That's what I'm trying to point out to you. Yes, obviously, and don't forget, the doctors are running a business too. We give free advice. We do not get paid for people that come and ask legitimate questions of health concerns. We do not say, well, I've just spent 6 minutes with you, and like a doctor, they can charge $90. We do it because we are community-minded, and it is a service that the government really, really needs because we need to be able to free up a doctor because they could go see a doctor because they think they need to see a doctor and it could be some trivial thing that a pharmacist can actually do.
I know, but that's a whole other conversation and we've done shows on that too where people are like, well, hang on a second, I should have seen a doctor but I saw my pharmacist and I was diagnosed incorrectly. Mary, it's been really interesting to get your perspective though. Thank you so much for calling. Lisa in the Grampians says, I don't want a company that owns pokey machines anywhere near my public health, thank you. Also, you scare me with these US examples. Let's not follow them, please.
Yeah, and that's a common complaint as well because supermarkets will often sell tobacco and will often sell alcohol as well, which cause, you know, a whole lot of health problems. Dave is in Croydon. Good morning, Dave. What do you think about supermarkets and vending machines selling what pharmacists do?
Well, I mean, there are health issues all around. I've been a nurse for many years, and one of the reasons that pharmacists and doctors are kept separate is because you want to keep the prescriber, a check on the prescriber. Many, many times I've seen pharmacists pick up errors that doctors have ordered, you know, 3-5 times decimals of order. So instead of 0.5, they've ordered 5 or whatever. And the pharmacist picks that up.
Yeah, we had anecdotally, we had someone say a similar thing where even maybe the type of it was the fundamentally it was the same medicine, but maybe a different dose or a different brand. And it's the pharmacist that says, actually, this is different to what you had last time. You know, is that change deliberate? Or you can talk to them about that. There's a text here from Cara in Roeville, and I'm interested, Dave, to see what you think on this, that says vending machines can be and will be broken into and be vandalised, and they also break down. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. That's just the same as any other vending machine. But a more important point, that people keep on going on about pharmacists being are allowed to open a doctor's surgery, but a doctor can't open a pharmacy. Again, it comes back to probity and who's in control of the dispensing of the drug. If a pharmacist is the only person who can own a pharmacy, then their registration is on the line, compared to if a doctor or me or you own a pharmacy, it's quite possible that we could instruct our employee to dispense a drug that was entirely inappropriate or even illegal. But there's no comeback on us, and we, without disrespecting pharmacists, there are people with personalities that could be instructed to do such a thing. And that's the reason why only pharmacists can own a pharmacy. I'm not a pharmacist, but...
You're well versed in your industry.
To keep them separate.
Dave, thanks so much. There's a text here that says, I'm a GP and I'm embarrassed by the spin both sides are putting on this. So what do you think? Should we be able to get our drugs, you know, at our supermarket where you buy your toilet paper? Can you put your prescription in at the same time? And what about vending machines? And what's interesting, Jono, is where these vending machines should be placed. Will they just be placed in GPs' offices or in regional and rural Victoria? Will it be beneficial? Maybe you can have a telehealth meeting with your doctor and the vending machine is at your local post office and you can go and pick up your prescription the next day. So maybe it'll work there.
Dr. Todd Cameron runs GP clinics in Bayswater, Spotswood and Ascot Vale. Good morning. Should we be getting our drugs from vending machines and in supermarkets?
Good morning, John. Look, it's an interesting question. I'm not sure that we're asking the right question here. I often think the most important frame is that, you know, we ought to be working together to improve health outcomes to our local communities. And they're very heterogeneous Australia-wide. So, you know, one solution that works in one community may not work in others. But I think it would be wise to not take things off the table and not say that something is, you know, a good idea or a bad idea until we have had some experimentation. We don't really have a big appetite for experimenting. So often the answer is, look, we don't really know the answer to some of these questions, but it would be useful to run a fairly well-designed experiment and actually find out what happens.
How far along is this? I mean, is this something that, before us going into depth with it today, is it conversations that you've been having? Is it something that you've been considering? Have you looked at potential vending machines? Like, how far along in the conversation is this?
Yeah, look, the vending machines, you know, robots exist for dispensing and they're used in pharmacies now. You know, to change that to a consumer level would obviously be a layer again. And clearly there's you know, questions around ownership and accountability there that would need to be answered. And people, you know, I've heard the conversations there that there's importance around separations of roles in terms of prescribing and dispensing. But, you know, we need to remember that all of the rules that are in play at the moment have delivered us the system that we have now, and some of the forces at play there are really strange forces, you know, such as the formation of the Guild and, you know, the rules around pharmacy ownership. They're all brought about by unusual forces over time that have brought us to the point where we are now.
We just had a chat with Anthony Tassoni from the Pharmacy Guild, and he was saying that unlike doctors, they don't charge for medical advice. They'll give their time freely because they want to be there for the community, and it's not so much about money for them. It's about helping the community. Do you think that they'd be able to compete if there were pharmacies or little pharmacy outlets in supermarkets or just vending machines?
Yeah, so, you know, I think there's a few things. The first thing is that we're all in this to improve and elevate the health outcome of our communities. Both groups, pharmacies and GPs, I think when it's reduced to a turf war, it's not particularly useful, and it doesn't serve the community particularly well when that's the mindset. There's no doubt that all healthcare workers do unpaid work. It would be ridiculous to suggest otherwise. And one is more about selling retail goods around prescriptions, and one is more around selling advice, essentially. And when they come to get a well, it works beautifully. And so, I think almost every pharmacist and every GP would have a story where the counterparty has helped them out, has saved their bacon because they've made an error and somebody's picked it up. So the checks and balances part of the process does work really well. But there are certainly parts of Australia where there would be market failure, and this is for general practice as well as pharmacies, where, there aren't enough services open at the right amount of time. I think, there's a speed, access, safety kind of triangle that we probably need to be thinking of.
Well, the other area that we haven't even touched on today is that there are a growing number of people that are accessing their medications and their drugs online and not necessarily through a prescription. And that's something that the AMA was saying that this will potentially maybe try and might stop that if access gets a little easier. But then there's a text here from Eric in Northgate says, stop talking about vending machines. It's never going to happen. What do you reckon, Todd? Is it going to happen?
I think, it would be relatively easy to say these are the top 20 medications that cover, 90% of needs. And particularly if you imagine a more remote location and you needed after-hours medication dispensed, you can imagine that there would be, and doctors and pharmacies have run like this for a while, where they might have an impressed, a restricted number of medications that they're able to give a small amount of after-hours. The home visiting doctor services used to do this for a while. So I think, again, if there was creative work together, but the accountability needs to be important that it is sheeted home to the right professionals. And, again, I heard people talking about how ownership of pharmacies is important. I don't believe that to be true because that doesn't make a lot of sense. At the end of the day, the pharmacy itself is accredited and the person that's in there is appropriately qualified to do the job. That's the same thing as in a general practice.
Well, look, thank you for your perspective and a calm perspective on this morning. We appreciate
it's heated,
that.
It's heated, isn't it? Yeah.
I never knew there was so much tension between pharmacists and GPs.
Mate, I found that out pretty quickly yesterday. That was Dr. Todd Cameron. He, you said earlier, runs GP clinics in Bayswater, Spotswood and Ascot Vale. Text here saying, because we were making the comparisons to the US, that it's already happening there. This is pretty spot on. Walmart also sells automatic weapons.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, just full stop.
Say no more.
Drop the mic. I'm done. Yeah, that's a good point. And is this just going to cause more of a monopoly? We've got a duopoly in Australia with our supermarket. So is this just going to shut down your local pharmacy? And how do you feel about that? Danny is in Hillside. G'day, Danny. How are you thinking about this?
Yeah, look, I'm really enjoying the conversation and listening open-mindedly to the conversation. I don't see any issues between pharmacies and GPs from the conversation thus far. My major concern is that if we look at vending machines for pharmaceuticals, if we look at vending machines for any other product, normally the vending machines are supplied by a company, by a manufacturer or supplier.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
That company actually controls the products that are supplied within that vending machine. It's not fair and equitable.
But I don't know if that's how it will be run, Danny. I think it's probably something that will be stocked by the GP, I think. I think it's more about access. But I see what you're saying. Like, you have the man or the woman that comes in and is from Schweppes or wherever it may be that stocks up that vending machine because that's who owns it. Or there's a coffee machine here that's run by a particular coffee brand. So you're thinking that maybe a drug company would have ownership of that vending machine?
Well, I know the concerns that have been voiced so far about the pharmaceuticals that are actually supplied by companies, sometimes swayed by incentives. Who's going to supply? The doctor or the pharmacy are not going to go out and buy a vending machine.
Danny, thank you for your thoughts. Dr. Rob Fair is the president of the Rural Doctors Association of Victoria. Let's find out if he thinks this is going to make it more convenient for regional people to get access to their drugs. Good morning. Do you think that'll be the case?
Oh, look, let me just first get the ice pack out and just say that a lot of rural doctors have excellent relationships with their local community pharmacists. So, no, I don't think this discussion's as heated as some people would have it.
Gee whiz, you should have heard Anthony Tassoni speaking earlier. He was very passionate.
I heard him. I guess if people feel that their livelihoods under threat and being challenged by other professions, and that's an understandable response. But look, for rural populations, the issue is certainly mainly one of access, and often in especially smaller rural towns, you often will only have one pharmacist, and potentially not even one pharmacist. In the smallest rural towns, we often will have, for example, in remote areas, we might have remote area nurses or bush clinic nurses who will actually dispense based on have special authorisation to dispense medication. So it's again, as Todd was saying just now, it's a pretty diverse scene in rural Australia. It's all about access. Certainly some patients in rural communities would be interested in, for example, online options or, you know, getting stuff by mail order. I think we can put the vending machines to one side in rural areas.
Because I had this image, Rob, that you could, say, for example, have a telehealth consultation with your doctor, and then if there was a, I guess maybe if we call them dispensing machines, right? It doesn't sound as tacky as vending machine. Vending machine, we think junk food, and it sort of has this kind of, it just doesn't sit right. But anyhow, let's call it a vending machine, dispensing machine. So you have your telehealth consultation with your doctor, and then there is a way to access that medication through a machine at your local post office. Could something like that work for areas where there's maybe not a pharmacist in town, and we know that regional and rural areas really struggle to even get GPs?
That's right. Well, absolutely. And telehealth, look, certainly in the rural health space, telehealth's become a really indispensable part of our work, and it's an indispensable way of accessing specialist care. And some specialists, say rheumatologists, might be able to prescribe drugs that GPs aren't authorised to prescribe. So they all send those prescriptions electronically. And so then what you're left with is a way of securely dispensing those drugs. And certainly from a Rural Doctors Association point of view, we're very open to creative and new ways of doing that, because we certainly hear anecdotally that some of our rural patients actually drive hundreds of kilometres if they need to get a script $40 cheaper if they find out they can get it cheaper down the road. Some of our patients are very price sensitive, and so they will find out ways of getting things cheaper.
Yeah, pricing's a big part of it.
Yep.
But it's also, you know, for medical reasons as well, whereby, you know, parents are driving hours in the middle of the night to get an asthma puffer or some kind of medication that they need for their child, and there might not be a 24-hour pharmacy open near where they are. But if there was, you know, some kind of outlet that was open for longer hours, wouldn't that be better for everyone?
Look, as long as everyone's in the loop, as long as there's a secure way of getting the prescription, look, I imagine that would only be some kind of vending machine would only really be an option for very commonly prescribed medicines, because there's a lot of medications out there, and it'd have to be a relatively safe and very commonly prescribed group of medicines. So, look, I can't see it really being viable in most smaller rural towns. I think something maybe via a post office or via the remote clinic is the way we'd look at it. I mean, Royal Flying Doctor Service sometimes operates clinics going out to more remote communities, for example, and they go out with the visiting nurse. So these medications might come out with a mail run. So I can't really see the vending machine model in rural towns, smaller towns.
It's interesting, because I thought, I mean, it's just so complicated, isn't it? I just wonder how far along this is. And we do have supermarkets in a lot of regional areas where you may struggle for pharmacists, so that may play a role there. But it's been interesting to get your perspective, Rob. Thanks so much.
Just if I could just add, I mean, as Todd said, look, really for us it's about the health outcomes. We want evidence-based ways of providing high-quality care. And looking briefly at the evidence overseas, I couldn't find any evidence that deregulation really helped rural communities. There was some evidence that it caused clustering in metro and bigger towns, but in rural it didn't really make a great deal of difference. But we're open to looking at the evidence and creative ways of providing better access to rural patients.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Rob. Dr. Rob Fair, President of Rural Doctors Association of Victoria. Ian is in Moe. G'day, Ian. What's the situation around Moe?
How you going? I don't know where this president from the AMA reckons he got his, 500 metres or 1.5 kilometres. There was a bunch of pharmacists all in the same street in Moe, but I digress. There's, in a 20-kilometre radius from Morwell, there's 12 doctors' surgeries. And depending on the day, You cannot guarantee which one you're going to have to get into. Most people have their general doctor that they go to. Sometimes you have to go somewhere else. they don't have your drug reaction or drug list.
And so it's, you reckon it's the chemist that does?
The chemist does, because my mother was given a prescription from a doctor that she doesn't normally go to. I took it to the chemist. The chemist said she cannot have this. It will kill her with the other medication.
Lots of people have said a very similar thing. And in terms of the radius down, you know, Maui in the main street there, quite a few people have said a similar thing to you, Ian, saying, well, actually, where I live, there's multiple chemists in my areas as well.
Yeah, and I guess it's thinking about pharmacists like the Senate as the house of review. You know, the doctor is the lower house and makes the laws, and then you get to the Senate, you get to the pharmacist, and they kind of review the
decision.
That's
so not how I would think about it, but I'm glad that's where your brain goes.
Terry is in Nagambi. Good morning, Terry. What are you thinking?
Well, our chemist has brought in an app. So all your scripts go on the app, and you get a reminder to say, you know, you've got 5 days left of them. Or what? I just went and picked one up. They let me know Friday I needed it. So I just punch it in. I let you know when it's ready and you go there and pick it up.
Yeah, there's lots of people that are saying the apps as well. So good on you. Thank you. Chris is in Northcote. Hi, Chris.
Hello. What a great program.
It's interesting, isn't it? I don't know whether we've solved anything, but it's sure been interesting.
Well, at least we know there's pharmacists and doctors who aren't in it for the money, which absolutely amazes me. But my question is, or statement, I came out of hospital after a major operation and I was on pretty heavy painkillers. I was there for 10, 20 days and I knew I had to have some medication. Anyway, they said, oh, this is what you'll need when you go home. We will order it from our pharmacy. And then in my mind, I kept on thinking all the specialists and everybody kept on referring to their pharmacy. And look, I think no matter if you want transparency, I think in a hospital, the surgeons, all the other consultants must declare if they've got pecuniary interest in any other aspect of your aftercare. I'm sure that these surgeons had a share in the hospital, and they also had a share in the pharmacy. So I think that it's about time the specialists declare, have they got any interest in any aftercare service?
Yeah, and we've had that from pharmacists asking the same thing.
Yeah. And let's have a chat now with Gary Mortimer, who is Professor of Marketing and Consumer Behaviour at the Queensland University of Technology. Good morning. Now, this is really interesting because in November, Amazon made headlines by applying to register the trademark Amazon Pharmacy in Australia. So it seemed like, you know, one of the biggest companies in the world is thinking that this is going to happen, that that there will be, you know, a watering down of pharmacy rules in Australia. How did they go with that?
Yeah, listen, they've certainly registered the name, but there's been no changes to the existing pharmacy agreement here in Australia. And I suspect that if your listeners have travelled overseas, particularly into the States or Europe or the UK, they would have encountered just a different format of pharmacy. So often a blended pharmacy and grocery chain, often grocery chains and discount department stores like Walmart or even Tesco in the UK, where they'll have an embedded pharmacy in them. So it's a very different international model when we compare it to what we see here in Australia, which is basically a standalone community pharmacy.
I wonder how much of it depends on what you need. So let's say you just needed a prescription for the contraceptive pill, you know, maybe something that you've been taking for a long time, you don't really care who hands that over to you, versus maybe something that you're taking for the first time. Would you then make a decision yourself as to whether or not you get that prescription whilst you're doing your weekly grocery shop, or whether you will go to a pharmacist where maybe you have a relationship with that person?
Yeah, listen, I think the idea that's mooted around is, you know, almost a sort of a vending machine or a transactional relationship where you scan a barcode and out pops a packet of pills. I think, listen, I don't sort of support that idea. I take a regular medicine every day and it's a repeat prescription. That's a little frustrating that I have to go to see my GP and get a repeat prescription for a product I've been taking for many years. But even when I hand that repeat prescription over to a pharmacist, they can see how long I've been taking it for, and they'll ask other questions along the way. Am I taking anything else? Has my health changed, or has my diet changed? So I think pharmacy today is not just about dropping in a script and picking up some tablets. It's also a lot more, connected to the overall health of a community and particularly a person.
A big part of this is convenience, isn't it? So you can stroll into a shopping centre or a supermarket and drop in your prescription or put a prescription into a vending machine and then go and do your supermarket shopping and then come back and your prescription is ready. Surely it's all about convenience these days, and people will want to do this if it's more convenient. Is that the way you're thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's certainly an argument for that. So, I think the idea of actually having an embedded pharmacy within a big business, a big retail business, whether that's a Costco or a Woolworths supermarket, as long as it's run by a pharmacy group and it's a qualified pharmacist and a pharmacy assistant there dispensing those medicines and providing that advice, there's certainly no suggestion that the kid that's filling the bottle of Coke in aisle three becomes the dispensing clinician. There's certainly a convenient option there, and I think probably the community in general would support a model that's probably aligned to a US or a UK model where you can walk in, do your grocery shopping, drop your script off, when you finish grab that script on the way out, and potentially get a blood pressure check, get a question about your health also at the same time.
We know that Amazon has actually withdrawn its trademark application. I mean, is there any other evidence that any other big players in this industry are considering this in a serious way, and will it make a change for the future?
Oh, if we go back probably maybe 8, maybe even 10 years ago, certainly there was the supermarkets looking at, the pharmacy agreement. This pharmacy agreement comes up for renewal every 5 years, and generally around that five-year mark, there's sort of interest in that space. But certainly no big players put their hand up. Probably the more recent one was Wesfarmers, the owners of Bunnings and Officeworks, Kmart and Target, putting in a bid to buy API, which is the Priceline Pharmacy Group. So certainly some interest from conglomerates to buy a pharmacy group, and what they do with that group,
we'll wait and see. Gary, thank you for having a chat with us. Gary Mortimer, Professor of Marketing and Consumer Behaviour at the Queensland University of Technology. John's in Baldwin North. Morning, John. What are you thinking?
Yeah, good morning. I was just ringing in to say that back in about 2006, I was involved in the development of the Blue Point remote dispensing system, which was targeted on dispensing medications to rural and low-access patients. I support, in doing that, we basically provided the ability for a patient at a depot location or a rural health service to scan their script to the pharmacy. A pharmacist at the other end could view that script and then basically dispense those medications to the patient where they're located in their particular community. So we supported all of the requirements around pharmacy practice, even to the point of labelling the medication correctly and then supplying it to the patient.
And did it take off? Was it something that worked?
That's the key point, Rochelle, is that the pharmacy guild essentially restricted our ability to commercialise the solution. We were just about to pilot the system in Minyip with John Aitken's pharmacy in Warracknabeal, basically to prove out the technical and practice requirements. And then it became very difficult for us to commercialise that any further without the support of pharmacy practitioners. So I think there is a long, long history of trying to restrict who can be involved in, as has been mentioned, pecuniary interest in medication. And I think it all comes down to making sure the right practice requirements are done. Essentially, the technology can be made agnostic to that. And that's what we were involved in supporting.
Wow. Well, it seems like it's all sort of been done previously, John. That's really fascinating. John, I feel like we've just scratched the surface here, but it does feel like, to quote Seinfeld here, that the wheels are in motion and that this is something that inevitably will happen. Not everybody's going to be happy about it. It will give more access for people in some areas. But, I think at the end of the day, you just have to ask lots of questions and be careful where you go and make those decisions yourself.
How often do we say that? We've just scratched the surface of this topic, but I totally agree with you. And I kind of feel a bit like it's a fait accompli as well. You look overseas and it's happening overseas, and I just feel like it's going to happen here in Australia as well.
That's it for the Conversation Hour today. If you've ever missed the Conversation Hour, please subscribe. Conversation Hour at the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want us to meet someone or talk about something, then you can email us, conversationhour@abc.net.au. Take care and we'll speak with you soon.